Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. This summer has seen some noteworthy seismic activity at the Yellowstone supervolcano. How do we understand geological data in order to keep panic in perspective? What research is underway to increase scientific understanding? Could human industry be impacting the supervolcano? Joining us now with insight is Tim Masterlark. He's a geophysics professor and researcher at the South Dakota School of Mines. He joins us on the phone from Rapid City. Dr. Masterlark, welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Could you give us, for starters, an overview of the activity since June 12th or so on the Yellowstone supervolcano so we know what we're talking about?
Yes, there has been an earthquake swarm this summer, and it's on the order of 1,000 volcanoes. It's an earthquake swarm, meaning it's a pulse of seismicity, relatively small earthquakes. Not big ones like we expect for the big one in California, but small earthquakes, and they're really not that unusual.
So if they're not that unusual, what does that mean exactly? When was the last time there was a swarm of earthquakes at this level?
There are swarms every few years. The most recent swarm was in 2010, and before that, 2009, and before that, 2005, I believe. So when I say it's not unusual, every few years there's an earthquake swarm.
All right. So what's happening underground then that either causes those swarms or those gatherings of earthquakes, or what happens as a result of them?
Okay. Yellowstone caldera is a very interesting geologic phenomenon. It's a volcano that lies over one of Earth's hot spots, similar to Hawaii. Now, Hawaii is in an oceanic setting. The Pacific plate moves over the hot spot, and that hot spot produces magmas and lavas and makes the Hawaiian island arc. The Yellowstone volcano is very similar, only its setting is onshore in continental crust. So if you look at the Snake River plain that moves off to the west from Yellowstone, that's the track that the volcano has moved as the North American plate moved over that hot spot. So it's an active volcano. It has been in the geologic past, and it will continue to be so in the future. So there's something very special there, which means that there are stresses in the crust, and they need to be released, and they do this via earthquake swarms.
Hmm. All right, let's talk about your research. What is it that you're trying to accomplish with your research team?
I primarily model deformation of volcanoes. So we can use satellite data, whether it's satellite radar or GPS, the same GPS information you get for your car and your telephone. We can use it to precisely track small movements of the Earth's crust, in this case of volcanoes. And based on the deformation that we see at the Earth's surface, my job is to build numerical models that simulate how rocks behave to figure out what the magma is doing at depth in a way that best accounts for what we observe at the Earth's surface. So effectively, what we're doing is taking the satellite data and using it to observe not what's going on the Earth's surface, but what's going on inside the Earth's surface, or inside the Earth, beneath the surface.
All right, so what do you already know? Are you developing new technologies to sort of figure out how to measure this more accurately? Are you trying to figure out for the first time what it actually looks like?
Well, both. The technologies are advancing very quickly. The satellite radar and other satellite information and processing techniques are advances in them, have advances in themselves. With new computing power, we can see more and more and do more and more with these same data. So with better data, more data, we can build better representations, better numerical models that simulate these systems. Ultimately, what we want to do is come up with more accurate pictures of what magma is doing at depth. And the goal here is if we can understand the magma budget, if you will, we can understand then how magma will then lead to an eruption. How much magma can a volcano hold before we can expect an eruption, for example?
All right, so the last time the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted, as I understand it, is 630,000 years ago. So you don't really know what caused that eruption at that time, or can you tell anything from the current geography and geophysics of the volcano to sort of predict an eruption?
That's the challenge. And the problem is we have modern instrumentation only for the past few decades. So we really get a very, very short snapshot in time of what the volcano is doing right now. The timing of the last three major supervolcano eruptions from Yellowstone was about 2 million years ago, a little over 1 million years ago, and then 600,000 years ago. So relatively little information on when the next one will occur. We could take an average time of those three episodes and say it will be roughly another few hundred thousand years into the future, but it's relatively difficult to make that kind of prediction that's useful for people.
I'm curious if you travel to the site at all, or is everything that you're looking at right here at the South Dakota School of Mines or in South Dakota, and you're basically using images, is there ever any on-the-ground work from scientists there?
There is on-the-ground work from scientists. I've collaborated with scientists from the University of Utah who really shoulder the major burden or opportunity of studying Yellowstone volcano, and it's very fascinating and a lot of fun. My work at the School of Mines really involves volcanoes worldwide, other than Yellowstone, including Yellowstone, but mostly I lead studies of volcanoes in the Aleutian Arc in Iceland and South America.
All right. I left the Philippine Islands the day before Mount Pinatubo erupted, and I had friends there who were cleaning up the ash for a long time and sort of dealing with the consequences. Let's talk about this Yellowstone supervolcano. In the event that there was an eruption in contemporary times, what would it look like and who would it affect?
Okay, to be clear, and I don't want to scare anyone,
right.
it is possible that there could be a large eruption, but it's a very, very low probability. Now, Yellowstone could erupt, but there are different types of eruption, and it's more likely that Yellowstone, if it were to erupt, would have either a hydrothermal, like geyser-type water activity, or possibly an effusive eruption that's not explosive and not dangerous. That's something we could very well see in our lifetime. But a big eruption is something, although it could happen, a low probability, but it would be a major blast, and what it means is an ash cloud would go up into the atmosphere, and we would see significant ash coverage over almost all of the United States. And this would be a major problem. It would ruin crops. It would ruin agriculture, livestock. All that ash in the atmosphere would very strongly change the climate for years to even decades. So it would be a major disaster, not just for this country, but globally.
In the Philippines, buildings collapsed too, just from the weight of that ash, and they had to shovel constantly to sort of keep things clear. A huge human impact. But make us feel a little bit better. If this were coming, would, under the current scientific knowledge, would we have some kind of warning? Would we know it was coming?
It's difficult, and this is why the science is so important here, because we really don't know exactly what the precursors are that lead to a big eruption. We can look at smaller eruptions from other volcanoes worldwide that happen more frequently, and we can get an idea of what we think we can expect. But every volcano is different. Every eruption within a single volcano is different. And this is the challenge of studying volcanoes. And frankly, why I'm so fascinated with them is that it's so challenging, and that always keeps things interesting.
Where did that fascination begin for you?
That's a very long story. I won't bore you with the details, but what it really comes down to is some remarkably insightful mentors, professors that I had throughout my education that really helped me understand that the Earth is a big place. The solid Earth is a dynamic place, and there's so many interesting things going on right beneath our feet.
Talk to me about this sense that you must have, I'm guessing, that much of your work is really paving the way for scientists in the future, maybe even thousands of years from now, as the science of volcanoes continues to evolve and the technology continues to improve. Do you have a sense that somebody someday is going to look back on your work and use it to inform theirs?
I would like to think people will look fondly on my work. But I always must understand, and it's important that everyone understand, that no single scientist is going to solve this problem. It's adding to the bulk of human knowledge, and that takes time and effort. I don't know if we'll have successful methods for predicting big volcanic eruptions, even in my lifetime. My hope is that, however, that my understanding and the work that I do will benefit those who follow in my footsteps. It's certain that with computing technology improving, with data collection and instrumentation improvements, we will get to the point where we can make accurate predictions. We're just not there yet. If you would permit me to tell a story,
yes, please.
I work on a volcano in Iceland, Hekla volcano, and it erupted in 1970, 1980, 1990, and 2000. I assembled a team, and we went out in 2010 to catch it in the act, and we had delusions of grandeur. We're going to catch it, and we're going to write fancy papers, and everyone in the world will know our names because we caught this volcano in the act. Well, we went out that summer of 2010 and installed seismometers on the flanks of Hekla volcano and then stood back to wait for the results. We're still waiting. So we were flat wrong. So on one hand, it's a miserable failure. But on the other hand, this is what makes the science so exciting. Something's different. And now we're trying to figure out what changed.
Do we have a sense if there is a human impact on seismic activity? Do we affect it at all with our industry technology?
The physics are clear, and it's well known that we can induce earthquakes. Earthquakes are the result of stress along a fault, a crack in the earth. If you change the stress, you change the fault stability, and you can either cause a fault to lock up tighter, or you can allow it, or you can force it to slip, which would be an earthquake. And we have the means to change these stresses, so therefore we can induce earthquakes.
Are there resources that are currently available really adequate? Are they up to the task? Do you find that you need more scientists, more funding to sort of do the work that needs to be done?
From my perspective, we always need more resources. There's always more to learn, which requires more data, more analysis, more people, the training of students and other scientists to work on these problems. We always need more resources, but the difficulty is trying to explain to society and make them understand not just the technical aspects, but the human impacts of this work and how important it is.
So it's easy to get to the fear part. It's easy to get to, I don't want it to erupt. Getting beyond that, what are the sort of core, you know, theories that you need the public to really understand about earthquakes, about volcanic activity, sort of move that knowledge forward beyond just panic?
Well, it's important that we understand that the Earth is a dynamic planet, and there are volcanoes. Plates are moving. There are earthquakes, small ones, big ones. This is just what we live with. And frankly, we benefit from this dynamic system. We have wonderful, lush cropland because we have volcanoes. We have mountains and minerals, mineral resources. We have oil resources. All of this is because our planet is dynamic. So really, it's a story of learning to live with these hazards. They're going to happen. There's nothing we can do about it. The best we can do is understand them and ultimately predict their behavior so that we can inform the public in best how to respond and ultimately live with these hazards because we do benefit.
Is an earthquake swarm like the one this summer at Yellowstone good for research? Does it help you sort of increase your knowledge?
Yes, it does. And without going into too much detail, an earthquake swarm is much more interesting than just a single event. And the reason is we can look at how the swarm started. And an earthquake swarm doesn't mean that it's a whole bunch of earthquakes in a single point. An earthquake swarm is really a story of a transfer of energy. One earthquake will occur. It will change the stress for other faults. And then that fault will trigger an earthquake and so on. So we can watch propagation of energy. So they tell us how energy moves around at depth within the Earth.
Tim Masterlock is a geophysics professor and researcher at the South Dakota School of Mines. Thank you so much for your time today. Any final thoughts that you want to leave us with on the Yellowstone supervolcano?
Oh, no, thank you. The final thought here is the semester is looming. and unfortunately, it's bittersweet. I have to put some of my research in volcanoes on the back burner as I spin up the courses for the semester. So, but it comes around again next summer, and we'll be looking at volcanoes again.
All right. We thank you for that. Thanks so much.
Thank you.